welcome to Final Fights. I am Mark Hoffmeyer, and joining me is a man who is currently stabbing a 26-foot shark in the eye with a cross. It's Jake Lewitt.
It's actually pretty easy to do. I thought it would be trickier, but I'm done. You know, I stabbed it, and it's gone away, and I'm fine. It looks so difficult. I mean, Preacher's flailing, he's stabbing all over the place. He only gets in the eye like, after a good few attempts, but, you know, first try, I'm there.
You know, you have about 37 puncture holes in you. How are you doing?
I'm all right. You know, it could be a lot more. There's a lot of teeth in that mouth. I'm trying to look on the bright side. It could be more. I could have fewer legs than I do now.
Can I drop some really neat something? I'm sure you noticed this, and it's in the commentary too, but there's a scene where the shark is trying to dig through the fence at the end, and it has its eyes closed. And when Susan McAllister cuts her arm, or Dr. Susan McAllister cuts her hand and jumps in the water, its eyes open and it goes and swims towards her.
That is, well, I mean, I don't know how useful the eyes would be to the shark attacking the fence. There's a lot of fence. It knows where it is. It rams into it.
Yeah. They said that when sharks attack, they close their eyes so they don't get hurt during the attack.
I did not know that.
Yeah. So Rennie Harlan thought of everything.
Well, it should have shut its eyes when Preacher was stabbing it then, shouldn't it?
Yeah. Well, that was a super cross.
Yes. Yes, of course. It went through the eyelid.
Now, this is a special occasion. So we're doing this Final Fights episode because you and I, originally on Movie Swims and Flicks, you and I did a Soggy Saga. So we started with Deep Blue Sea. We talked about Anaconda. I mean, we moved through some soggy pictures.
Lake Placid, Piranha. Yeah, Swim Fan.
Congo. Well, I mean, it's close enough. But so we decided, hey, let's start a Deep Blue Sea podcast. So right now, if you type in Deep Blue Sea, the podcast, you go at Deep Blue Sea Pod. We're on Facebook. We're on Twitter. We're on Instagram. Right now, we're on iTunes. We're pretty much everywhere you can listen to podcasts. And we'll be on more eventually. We're doing the rollout right now. But I figured, hey, let's bring you on here. Let's do a Final Fights episode to give people a little bit of a feel for what to expect on the Deep Blue Sea podcast.
Yeah, let's promote it.
That's right. I mean, you and I, though, we're genuine fans, and I'm sure if you guys, I know people who listen to Movies, Films, and Flicks, so you know that we, and you've probably heard Jay before, so you know that we absolutely adore Deep Blue Sea. And this Final Fight, I gotta tell you, when I was working in a theater, so when I was 17 years old in 1999, I was working in these two theaters in St. Petersburg, Florida. One was Tyrone 6, one was Crossroads 8. And 99 was a massive year. I mean, in July and August, you had movies like Blair Witch, Runaway Bride, Sixth Sense. I mean, just gigantic movies that made oodles of money. But Deep Blue Sea hung in there, and it did a good job. I mean, it made probably over $100 million with inflation while being surrounded by even American Pie at the time, which was huge. But I remember watching this movie, and I would sneak into the theater at the end. And I'm telling you, this movie was packed for the longest time, maybe a couple weeks. And then the people started – it became less and less as the bigger movies came out. But people at the end, I'm telling you, every single time, I've never witnessed this before, people were just screaming, just going, go LL. No one knew what Thomas Jane's name was, but they're like, go guy, go guy. And they cheered when Susan McAllister was eaten. This was one of the biggest crowd participation movies that I've ever witnessed. And that's why I think it's just like, it's so endeared to me because the audiences just ate up every second of this movie. So I just adored I adore this Final Fight. What do you think about this Final Fight?
I wish I'd seen it in the cinema. I never got the chance, unfortunately. And they're reopening some cinemas here now, and they're showing some classics. I'm like, why aren't you showing Deep Blue Sea? I'd love to go and see it now. Jurassic Park? Oh, I've seen that. Deep Blue Sea, come on. I love this Final Fight. It's like a fifth of the film. It's a 3-on-1. I know normally you tackle kind of 1-on-1s for the Final Fights, but yeah, you got Carter, you got Preacher, and you got Dr. Susan McAllister, all versus the surviving Gen 2. And it's protracted. There's like rest periods in between. it's an old fight. It takes on Preacher. Preacher gets away. Carter saves Preacher. Then Preacher's recuperating. And then Carter and Susan make a plan. Susan just abandons that plan. Carter has to go and save her. And then Preacher comes in at the end and takes it down and saves them all. I love this fight. It's awesome. But then, you know, I love this film.
I think it's great. Oh, sorry to interrupt you, man. No. You know what I love the most about it is, so originally this movie, Preacher dies when the shark initially attacks him. And it comes down to Susan McAllister and the bionic stud muffin Carter Blake, or Super Tom, to kill it. And during this scene, like test audiences hated it so much that they went back and did reshoots where Susan McAllister is killed and Preacher and Carter are the ones who live. So if you're watching it, there are scenes where Carter's running around with his, I don't know, spear, crossbow, whatever his weapon, and he's running all over the place with it. But then when Preacher wakes up, he just grabs the gun.
You don't see him get the. He's like been crawled. You see him. He's got the gun and he crawls quite laboriously. Just kind of clambers up to where Susan had been. That kind of vantage point. So you have to assume he's been bitten in the leg, pretty badly injured by this giant shark. And he crawled down to where Carter had been running. He then crawled back up to where Susan was, and it's taken him ages, but he's done it. He's the hero. He's getting it done.
You know what's funny? You just really reminded me of something too. You said there's just little side areas. This is a long fight, but now that I think about it, you have. I love this. So he gets stabbed at the cross. The facility starts sinking, and they learn that the shark wants to sink the facility to destroy it and escape. But I love that there's a pretty long scene where they just make dynamite. He's like, yeah, we have 2.5 sticks here. That'll be enough. And then they bring a car battery out of a scene, and then he tells her to stick the thing on the positive side, and then it goes boom. There's a lot of detail to this thing, but
yeah.
I mean, that's what I like it though. So at the end, when Preacher finds the cable and the battery, you know exactly what he needs to do. And I think what I love about Rennie Harlan and where his horror background comes into play is when he shoots, when Preacher gets up and I'm jumping all over the place, but I don't care. So you know this movie. Susan McAllister gets eaten. TJ's in the water with her because they couldn't re-edit it. It catches a ride on the shark. The shark takes him around for about 5 minutes underwater. Eventually, Preacher takes the thing, shoots the explosive through the shark's fin and into Carter's leg. And it's just such a funny, random, it's just such a mean, funny little thing. I love that moment in it, that it's just... He finally shoots a thing, but everything goes wrong, and it wedges right into Carter's leg. It gets
Doesn't
every
call
time.
Doesn't he call it a 45-foot shark?
Yeah.
And it's a 26-foot shark.
Yeah, there's that weird narrative in this movie where they keep saying how it's 45 foot, but it's not.
It was purposely 26, so it was 1 foot longer than the shark from Jaws. That's Rennie Harlan's whole reason to make the film, it seems, is to have a bigger shark than Jaws.
I bet you Rennie Harlan talked to Walt Conti, the guy who did the design for the sharks and made it work with the aeronautics and remote controls. He also worked on Anaconda. He worked on Free Willy. Rennie Harlan just goes, yeah, can we have a 45-foot shark? And Conti's like, no, I'll do 26.
The megalodon. Don't be ridiculous.
Yeah, exactly. But it still looks great. Yes. And also, that final explosion, that's a big water explosion.
It's huge. It makes me think, you know, there's a helicopter exploding earlier on in the film where less is made of that explosion. I think it's because they were waiting to like, blow all of the explosion fanfare with the shark. Because it's great. It just goes everywhere.
Those 2.5 sticks of dynamite, they blow the shark up a good 100 feet in the air.
Bear in mind, that the spear goes through its fin, so it's all external. It's not like it's been stabbed in the gut or something. It's just that's an explosion that happened above the shark, and yet still all of this blood goes up and everywhere. It's great. And then when Edo says, like, bring me some sushi, I think most of that shark is cooked at this point.
there's a mushroom cloud of shark debris just flying everywhere and slapping on the ground. And later on, you can hear some of it smacking on the ground, and there's an overhead shot of it. I mean, there is...
It's awesome.
There's nothing left of... I mean, what kind of dynamite are they using there? Oh, that made me so...
They were from flare guns.
That's one of my all-time favorite explosions, too. I mean, I just love how massive that is. And I just love that Carter gets attached to it. It also brings in a lot of things. Also, the true hero of this movie really is Preacher. He kills two of the sharks.
It does.
In this film.
And he loses his best friend, the bird, and Scoggins. He loses like real close people to him. So he's going through a lot. Everyone else is kind of... Carter, I don't think, was that close to anyone who died. He had some kind of history with Scoggins, some kind of history with Susan. But Preacher, he's lost the bird. He's lost his best friend, Scoggins. He's lost it. Did he lose the crucifix? Is that still in the eye?
Wow, that's a great question.
I think he gets it out. I'm trying to see. But there's a couple of moments in this final fight that really get me. One is when Susan, like, cuts her hand with this giant rusty shard of something. That's got to be painful. And even if she were to survive, that's tetanus. That's guaranteed tetanus. And the second is when the shark approaches Carter and those teeth just kind of extract from the shark's mouth. They just kind of sink down. That is goddamn terrifying.
It's beautiful, isn't it?
It is, but it's also like, oh my Christ.
And when people knock on the CGI of that movie, they never just say, yeah, but that scene is badass.
Yeah.
That's truly frightening. And also, I got a theory. So that shark could easily jump over those fences. We've established this already.
Yep.
But it knows that Carter and Susan McAllister are still alive. I mean, these sharks orchestrated everything. These sharks are incredibly smart. Listen to Deep Blue Sea, the podcast, to kind of get a further breakdown of this. But I'm thinking it's just waiting, digging in there. It's thinking these people are going to have to try to kill me. They're going to have to go on the offensive, and they're going to make a mistake. And the thing's right, because what happens is both Carter and McAllister jump in the water to try to stop it. So it's tearing at the fence was just to
get another snack.
Yeah, exactly. So it's tearing on the fence, getting a snack, and it knows these people have to go after it, and it can't shoot it with the dynamite that's going to make it become just a huge nuclear bomb of explosion. So it gets them both in the water, it eats her, but it doesn't expect his great wrangling skills. So he gives him a ride, tries to knock him off, and at the end, the shark could have probably jumped over the fence again, even though maybe Carter hanging on to him and the thing right in its fin. I bet you would try to swim through that fence to get Carter off of it and to get potentially the explosive off of it. What do you think?
Yeah. I mean, we know that the sharks are very intelligent and know far more than they're given credit for. But I don't think the shark knows about the explosive.
Oh,
like, that's
okay.
Going too far. I think it knows it's been hit by something, and maybe that. But because at the start of the film, we see the shark gets hit by the spear gun and it goes taut. So it knows it's been hit by something and is tied to something.
Oh.
And maybe getting Carter will get it all. Dislodge the kind of the noose that's been placed upon it, but not the explosion. I think that has to be a surprise. When that comes to the shark doesn't quite know what's going on. It's the first time the shark is surprised all through the film, and it's the last as well.
How funny would that be if the shark knows that an explosive is in its fin because it hears Carter saying, blow it up, so it just stops.
The battery!
Yep, so it just stops, and then it's just Carter on its fin. And
yeah, it stops, it swims back towards Preacher. It's like, you're not going to blow me up now, are you? I'm next to you. What are you going to do?
And you know how explosive this is. If you blow me up, you blow up Carter. It just plays a game of chicken with Preacher.
Yeah.
And then it does like a good, the bad, and the ugly. Like, it keeps getting closer on their eyes. It's one eye and then his eye.
But for the shark, it's the eye with the crucifix still stuck in it.
And then you have Carter on the fin. So it's just the three of them with the music, with the camera tightening in on their eyes. What do you think?
Yeah, I like it. That would be great. I mean, this ending is already perfect, but that's an alternatively perfect ending.
Oh, man, that makes me so happy. And also that tour of the facility that the shark gave us, that was really good for my data articles that I wrote. So I got to track where the shark was swimming. And I really knew where everything was. That's what I love about this movie. You know what's going on. And at the end, okay, what I love about the ending is the shark wants out, they have to stop it. It's just such a pure, easy ending. But it builds really well because there is unexpected moment. Like so Ebert wrote a review for this movie. And what he said was, this movie is, you know, there's familiar elements. But the one thing about this movie that makes it stand out amongst the rest is that there are surprises in it.
Mm.
And I think that's what works so well. I mean, Susan McAllister just gets wiped out with zero fanfare. Then you have Preacher coming back to life. You have the eye cross stabbing. You have the spear through the leg and the fin. And then the gigantic explosion. So in this final fight, there's still surprises left after almost being drained for an hour and 35 minutes, 95 minutes. And then it builds to Deepest Bluest, which is even a greater surprise.
Hell yes.
Then
the best surprise of all.
I mean, but that's what's cool, right? It really does a good job of adding fun wrinkles that can get the audience involved.
Absolutely. Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, Susan being taken out with no fanfare, like, she's the victim of the explosion earlier, dislodging some metalwork. So the rung she tries to climb up on, it just falls out. Had that stayed in place, she'd have survived. And you don't see that coming. You think, oh, she's going to try and reach it. Maybe she won't reach it in time. You don't think, oh, it's going to fall out. It's going to collapse. I feel like she should have maybe tried a little harder to try and climb up using the kind of the holes that were left, like Carter does when he tries to use the same exit. But she gives up a little too early.
Yeah. She accepts her fate.
Yeah. What, maybe she's feeling guilty. She knows that she doesn't want to get out of this. She's kind of the captain going down with the ship kind of thing.
And I like what Rennie Harlan had to say. He said that it was Frankenstein's monster meeting its creator. And it knew
it.
Yeah, and it knew it had to eat her, and she's the mother of creation. So it's the ultimate. She makes the ultimate sacrifice. So the movie wasn't written this way, but then they switched it. So I do like that the shark gets revenge on her, because she's the antagonist of this movie. This shark is just trying to escape from prison.
Is it revenge on her? Because without her, the shark wouldn't be super intelligent.
But it also was locked up.
Yes, true.
It wants out, and if it knows that she's alive, she's going to keep hunting it.
Yeah, that's true. Okay.
Wait,
convinced me.
Is there revenge, though? Wait, that's a good point, because it was a Mako shark. They're still very smart. But then it made it basically human smart, human-esque smart. I can't think of a better word. But it made it incredibly smart. Like, would it want revenge? But then it's imprisoned, getting shot with stuff and pricked and poked, and they're trying to kill it.
She also did kill one of the other sharks. Maybe it's revenge for that, for the shark that was killed. This is a Gen 2. So are those other two sharks this one's parent?
It's a good question.
Potentially. So this is like a second generation. The other two are first generation. So I don't think it's out of order to extrapolate that those two Gen 1 sharks created a Gen 2 shark. So maybe this is revenge for killing her mum.
And it goes after Preacher first, because he kills the first one.
Kills the other one, yeah.
Oh, I love it. And what do you think about the line where she says, you may be the smartest animal in the world, but you're still just an animal. She got that.
She was correct. Humans are just animals.
Yeah, it's true.
It depends on how far you want to take it.
Yeah, you're right.
It does fall down to its base desire of it wants food.
And it gets stuffed. I mean,
yeah,
it's nuts.
It eats, it gets filled, and then she becomes part of that explosion at the end. So bits of that meat that's flying through the air, some of that is Dr. Susan McAllister.
It ate her fast.
It did. It ripped her in half. Yeah, she's gone.
And also, too, there's the how happy were you when you see LL Cool J's bloody hand reaching up? Oh,
yeah, it's the best.
And then the score kicks in. Oh, that's so great. And then he cocks the spear gun, which is kind of weird.
Has he seen that before? Because he's kind of looking at it thinking, yeah, okay, this is just working out what it is. And then he doesn't hit exactly what he's aiming for, but he still hits a shark from a long way away, having been injured quite badly. He's still got that wound on the side of his face from falling down the stairs earlier. He's been through a lot in this film. He's almost got cooked in his own oven. But he still manages to make a half-decent shot of it. Like, if that was me using a spear gun for the first time from that distance under that amount of pressure, I'd probably fire it the wrong direction. Would be nowhere near the shark. I'd hit the remnants of the tower or something.
You blow up the tower?
Yeah.
I gotta tell you, though, he's pretty good in the clutch. I mean, he gets stuck in the oven. Right. He's almost cooked. He gets out. He says, you ate my bird, then blows it up. I have a question, too. For this, do you think the deleted scenes hurt the power of This Is for Scoggins? Because they deleted a lot of his moments with Scoggins.
They do. I do want more of that backstory still in the film. The back and forth with the cake banter that they have during the party and the next day. The first few times I watched this, I hadn't seen the deleted scenes, and I still got the friendship between Preacher and Scoggins, that, especially like the way when Scoggins turns around, kind of the zip me up moment, and they have that little kind of friends moment before Scoggins goes off and doesn't come back. And then when Scoggins doesn't come back, Preacher is very sad. So you do understand there is a relationship between them. It's just prior to those moments, there's very little interaction between Preacher and Scoggins, which was what was cut out. And yeah, I think it would have been better with more of that.
And then I also,
we have more to talk about.
I also love, too, is that when he blows up the shark at the end, he goes, yeah! But then he immediately realizes, I probably just blew up Carter. And he looks sad. Yeah.
But, you know, the more important thing was blowing up the shark, I think. It was more important to kill the shark than to not kill Carter for the benefit of the rest of the world. You know, it's the needs of the many, needs of the few kind of thing.
How are Carter and Preacher going to explain this?
I would say just stick to as truthfully as possible. Start out with Dr. Susan McAllister, Dr. Jim Whitlock. They screwed us all over. They made these sharks super intelligent, and they were so intelligent that they killed everyone, but they weren't intelligent enough to take out me and Preacher.
Whoa.
Just try and just sell out Susan and Jim immediately. It's like these guys screwed up. We did what we can. Unfortunately, Janice, Scoggins, Ida Turturro, Sam Jackson, they all lost them, afraid. We did it. Guys, we saved us all. If it hadn't been for us, that shark could still be out there. coming for your boat right now. Because who knows, if that shark got out, didn't blow up, that boat is seconds away. They could have been next.
Yeah, they would have been, what, mega shark versus, what, giant octopus when the shark jumps out of the air and eats the airplane?
There we go. It would have taken out the boat.
Yeah, that boat would have been toast.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. And also, too, I guess they have the helicopter explosion. So someone came to rescue Jim. We had an accident. And there's trace, like, they know about that. Like, there's that.
I mean, they can just look around.
Yeah.
Just look around at where Aquatica used to be.
Those sharks, though, man, they came close. And I feel bad that none of them made it out. What do you think that shark would have done if it made it out? Just lived its life?
Well, after eating the boat and the remnants of the boat, the people on the boat, it would have, I think it just would have gone out and been a shark. Just gone out and, you know, hunted. Probably would have been more successful at hunting the other sharks, but it's also bigger than most of the sharks. In terms of having a, it's a very intelligent shark, but I don't think it's going to try, like, world domination or interstellar travel or anything. It's just going to, I think it might be a bit of a frustrated life. Because it's stuck in the ocean with no other creatures of a similar intelligence to it, so no one to really talk to. It's going to go a little insane, would be my guess.
That's tragic.
Yeah. It kind of did it a favor. Cutter and Preacher, they did it a favor by putting it out of its misery.
But they blew up every bit of it, too.
Yeah, it's gone.
I'm kind of depressed now. That shark would have lived a very sad life.
Mission accomplished.
Oh, wow. Like, there are movies like that where they, like, there's something that the world won't understand, so it has to live by itself.
Yeah. Yeah, did you see the Watchmen TV series?
No, is it good?
Yeah, but there's a very intelligent character there who kind of is in isolation, and it doesn't fare well for him. Yeah. So I won't go into it more, but it's a good show. I'd recommend it.
I need to get into it. I was going to start watching it, and then they're like, well, we're not doing a second season. So I'm like, was there like a cliffhanger that wasn't resolved?
There's a bit at the end that could be read as a cliffhanger, but if you take it as there's no second season, then it's wrapped up nicely enough.
Okay, cool.
You can kind of think, okay, this is where it was going. Well, this is what it was hinting at. It's like the end of Inception.
Ooh.
Where, like, it's a cliffhanger, but it's not really a cliffhanger. It works within the narrative.
Because don't they establish something with his watch or DiCaprio's watch that the end is what it is?
I don't know about that, but I've never had a problem with the end of Inception. I just watched it again the other day, and it's not about whether the spinning top falls or not. It's about whether he cares that it falls or not. So it works fine. He doesn't care anymore. He's accepted whatever he's doing. He's just supposed to spend time with his kids. Real or not, doesn't matter. It's whether he cares or not. That's what it's all about.
And that never bothered me, that ending, but I guess it really stuck with a lot of people. Jeez Louise.
I know. I've had a few debates about that. We're not getting into it today.
No, but any final thoughts about this fight? Like, what was your favorite moment? Favorite moment of this?
Oh, it's the teeth coming down. I love that bit. This is for Scoggins is a nice line. I can't separate this into small bits. The explosion. The shark. The explosion. It's got to be the giant nuclear bomb going off inside this shark that just showers everything.
All right. So those, I love those. I guess I'll go with the stabbing of the eye, and then I'll go with the shooting through the fin and into Carter's leg.
Yeah, they're all good. Every moment this is good.
I mean,
even makes sense that Preacher gets attacked on the surface, because they've said earlier that the shark's attracted to bright colors and thrashing. And when Preacher's up there, he's wearing a white coat and he's splashing around. And he's next to one of the extinguisher life vest things, hybrids.
That's double bright.
Yeah, he's screwed.
Oh, wow.
He had no chance.
And listen, I think at the end of the day, the audience and Renny Harlin during the test period made the right decision. I mean, to have at the end, if it would have been Carter and Susan, it would have been pretty, I don't know, I would not have liked that. So I love that at the end it's Carter, it's kind of the two blue collar guys of the boat, and they're just kind of hanging out, and then they worry about a potential fourth shark. I love that little bit at the end, and then the boat's coming back. Now, why is that boat, why is the Coast Guard not coming? This movie's perfect, so I don't want to critique it. But wouldn't a Coast Guard boat have come out quicker than the staff boat?
You'd think so, especially after the helicopter went down. Mm-hmm. You think when the helicopter didn't come back, something would have happened. I think that's something we'll get to talk about in a future episode of Deep Blue Sea, the podcast. We need to dig into that a bit better.
And also,
because we will be covering this final fight over four or five different episodes, I think.
and then real quick, so on our second episode of Deep Blue Sea, the podcast, we talk about a deleted scene in Deep Blue Sea where Paul Giamatti is the Coast Guard guy trying to get his boys out there to save these people. So that's listen to Deep Blue Sea episode 2. It's called Uncut Giamatti, and you will learn more about the deleted scene and the Coast Guard trying to save them.
Absolutely. If only Nick Rehack was here to deliver some of the dialogue that Giamatti had.
I gotta save my boys. All right, so if you enjoyed this episode, head over to Deep Blue Sea, the podcast, listen to that, find us on social. Jay, do you want to tell them where it is?
At Deep Blue Sea Pod on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, deepbluesea@gmail.com is our email address, and you can find it all there. Every week, a new chapter of Deep Blue Sea is reviewed.
I love it. So want to promote anything before we get out of here of your stuff?
Jay Clure on various things. You can find me. The Lamcast is my other podcast. It's fine.
Thank you for joining me.
Hey, anytime.
All right, so for me, Mark Hoffmeyer, and for Jay Clute, this is Final Fights. We'll see you next week.